Hey,
are you listening?
When you find yourself in danger, when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking, there is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call
OTR.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly. Johnson's Wax, Johnson's Car New, and Johnson's Self-Polishing Glow Coat present Fibber McGee and Molly, written by Don Quinn, with music by the King's Men and Billy Mills Orchestra.
It's time for My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball.
Hello, everybody.
A new series based on Isabel Scott Rorick's gay, sophisticated Mr. and Mrs. Cougar, starring Lucille Ball with Richard Denny.
Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. Our Miss Brooks is an English teacher at Madison High School. She can tell you everything you need to know about the present and past subjunctive, but she's not at all sure about the future. That is, her romantic future with biology teacher Philip Boynton.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Joseph Schlitz Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin presents The Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
You bet your life. Groucho Marx in You Bet Your Life, the comedy quiz series produced and transcribed from Hollywood. And here he is, the one, the only...
Hey, that's me, Groucho Marx.
Hey everyone, this is OTR Rob, welcoming you to another edition of Fibber McGee and Molly. This episode is from March 23rd, 1946. The episode is entitled Building a Kite, and what you're going to find out here is that Fibber is trying to build a kite from scratch, which they did back then. I don't know if any toy manufacturers made kites in those days. They might have, but more than likely they made kits for kites and for kids to put them together. And it was a learning process, but anyway... So it's going to be a tit-for-tat competition here between Fibber and Doc Gamble. Two grown men behaving like kids, go figure. And after that is My Favorite Husband from February 10th, 1951. The episode is entitled Misunderstanding of a Black Eye. And after that is Our Miss Brooks from March 11th, 1951. The episode is entitled Tex Barton, Basketball Star. And I think they get their wires crossed on this one. And after that is The Halls of Ivy from March 19th, 1952. The episode is entitled The Oldest Living Grad. And the follow-up in the rear is You Bet Your Life from November 1st, 1951. The secret word is tree. So enjoy all these shows, and I'll see you all back here next week. God willing, and the creeks don't wise. Get your vaccination, wear your mask, social distance, and be safe.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly. Makers of Johnson's Wax products for home and industry present Fibber McGee and Molly with Bill Thompson, Gail Gordon, Arthur Q. Bryan, B. Benaderet, and me, Harlow Wilcox. The script is by Don Quinn and Phil Leslie. The music by the King's Men and Billy Mills Orchestra. that the weather's warmer, naturally your doors and windows are apt to be open while you work in the kitchen. That brings up a little cleaning problem, because dirt and dampness do come in to soil your kitchen linoleum. Of course, it isn't a problem if you have Johnson's Glow Coat on your floors. You just whisk away the dirt and moisture with a cloth, and right away your linoleum comes up smiling. That's one of the many nice things about Johnson's Glow Coat. It not only gives linoleum a beautiful polish and makes the colors bright and fresh, it also forms a tough, protective wax film that wards off dirt and spilled things. Naturally, this wax protection makes linoleum last longer, too. Johnson's Glow Coat is wonderfully easy to use. There's no rubbing or buffing. You simply apply and let dry. That's all there is to it. Glow Coat shines as it dries, never streaks. In only 20 minutes, your linoleum and other floors are shining beautifully and ready to use. Try it, won't you? Ask for Johnson's Self-Polishing Glow Coat. The month of March is usually pretty windy in Westville Vista, and every time a big breeze blows, somebody brings up the subject of kite flying. In fact, here's a big breeze blowing about kites to his wife right now, as we meet Fibber McGee and Molly.
And I could see right away that this kid didn't know anything about flying kites. He was going at it all wrong, you see.
He probably wasn't used to pulling strings the way you are, did he?
Right. So I ankles over to him and I says, "Look, sonny," I says, "you're flying that kite all wrong," I says. And so I grabs the string out of his hand.
Why, you had no business doing that, McGee. It was his kite.
I was doing it for his own good. He wasn't flying it right.
If more people did fewer things for the good of more people, more people would like more people more. So, what happened?
I lets out more string, and whammo, the kite peeled off like a seagull diving on a shrimp and gets hung up in a sycamore tree.
Fine. I hope you paid the lad for his kite.
I gave him $1, but he wouldn't stop bawling, and then his old man come running out, and he seemed to take his side.
Prejudiced, was he?
Definitely. I don't take that stuff from anybody, no matter whose father they are, that I bust their kid's kite. So I walks up to this guy and I says, real deadly and quiet, like George Raft. I says, "Take off your coat, Buster," I says.
You're rapidly approaching the world's record for doing too many wrong things in the shortest time, dearie. Did the man take off his coat?
Did he take it off? Ooh. I haven't seen a coat come off so fast since it rained the day I painted the garage. He come out of that coat like he had bees up his sleeve.
And then?
Well, then I could see we'd both catch our death of cold standing there with our coats off in that March wind. So I hopped onto a beer truck that happened to be passing at the moment.
Very discreet of you, I'm sure.
Well, my gosh, I didn't want to beat the guy up in front of his own kid.
Well, tell me one thing, sweetheart.
Mm.
How did you get to be such an expert on kite flying in the first place?
What do you mean, get to be? I always been an expert. You remember the kites I used to fly back in Peoria, up on top of Kickapoo Hill?
Heavenly days. Is that what all you boys were doing, yelling and screaming all the time up there on Kickapoo Hill?
Yes, sir. The best place in the United States for kite flying. I never yet been up on top of Kickapoo Hill, but what there was a big wind up there.
Well, I'll say it anyway. I've heard other people say the same thing.
And I made some of the best and biggest kites that ever flew, too. I made one once that was...
Come in. Hello, Dr. Gamble. Nice to see you.
Hello, Molly. And how are you today, knucklehead?
Thanks to the fact that I never take any of the medicine you give me, I'm fine, butcher boy. You want to see me about something, or are you just hiding from the police?
You know, I should like to see you treat Dr. Gamble with a little more respect, dearie. They say he's one of the finest surgeons in the country.
In the country, that's quite possible. But here in the city, he's just another palooka with a mail-order stethoscope. And he just uses that as an excuse to get your coat off so his nurse can go through your pockets. Correct me if I'm wrong, Fatso.
Correcting you when you're wrong would be a 24-hour-a-day job, zebra face. Was I interrupting some profound discussion when I came in?
Oh, no, Doctor. McGee was just telling me what an expert kite flyer he was as a boy back in Peoria.
I was not only expert at flying them, but I was also expert at also making them.
That's a lot of bilbo, Driplip. Kite making is a delicate process, and you're about as handy with tools as a moose with a flute.
Did you ever build a kite yourself, Bucklewart?
Why, you leaky little bagpipe. I've made kites that would have you hiding your head under a passing streetcar.
Oh, yeah, I suppose you could still build a kite that would fly, sharpshooter.
I could indeed, bug brain. I haven't touched a kite in 40 years, but I can still build one that'll fly so many rings around you, you'd be even dizzier than you are.
For dough?
For any amount.
$10.
Done.
No, boys, that's gambling.
Well, my gosh, we've got to have some incentive.
Well, make it for $10 then and give it to me.
Huh?
And I'll send it to the National Society for Crippled Children for Easter season.
Fine.
Great. What's the deadline, McGee?
4:00.
It's a deal.
Put it in writing, boys. Who's got some paper?
Not me.
Not me.
I know where there's some. Right here in the hall clerk.
No, no, Mark. Not in there. I have a look.
Fox, and his name was Ray. He had a careless habit. He always ran away. When I told him he'd regret it, no attention did he pay. And I saw a lady wearing him just the other day. Oh, boy, this is really going to be a kite. Doc Gamble might just as well pony over his $10. He's washed up like a handful of seaweed.
Oh, now listen, don't underestimate the doctor, dearie.
Hmm?
There's a lot of gray matter in that bald old skull of his.
Take away his brains and education, and what has he got? No more personality than a trout. My gosh, he's so...
Come in. Oh, hello there, Mrs. Carstairs. Do come in.
Thank you, my dear.
Hi, Carstairs. Fling the furs on the floor and flop the fragile frame on our fine furniture. You don't mind if I go on working?
Not at all, Mr. McGee. May I ask what you're making?
He's making a kite, Millicent.
A kite?
Yeah, I and Doc Gamble are both building kites, Carsey.
Oh, I see.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing else to do until the marble season, I presume.
They have a little wager, Millicent, to see who...
So that old fumble-thumb Gamble has got less chance than a tightrope walker with the hiccups. Ever fly a kite, kid?
No, Mr. McGee. Although I was a bit of a tomboy when I was a girl.
Mm-hmm.
I was shortstop on the softball team... forward on the basketball team, high diver on the swimming team, and ran the mile in 2 minutes and 7 seconds.
Heavenly day.
Now, just a minute, Millie. Running a mile in 2 minutes and 7 seconds is impossible. Nobody's ever run the mile in even 4 minutes.
Possibly no one else ever had a caterpillar drop down the neck of his tracksuit just as the starting gun went off.
Well, my goodness, I never would have thought of you as an athlete, Millicent. Did you ever play any tennis?
Badminton was my game, my dear. I shall never forget the trophy I got for my first championship game. They gave me the bird.
How about boxing, Carsey?
Oh, not now, thank you, Mr. McGee. Perhaps later in the... Oh, good heavens. I simply must be getting home. I'm expecting a baby.
What?
Well, listen, you didn't tell us about...
Please, my dear. I'm expecting a baby grand piano delivered this afternoon.
Oh.
And I must be there when it arrives. Good day.
Now, well, back to work, kiddo. Hand me that piece of 2x4 there, will you? Thanks. There.
Just what is that you're making now, dearie? A box to carry your kite in?
No, no, no. This is my kite. It's a box kite.
Oh, seems awfully heavy for a kite.
Well, that's because I haven't got the paper on it yet. I use a very lightweight paper.
Oh, I see.
Oh, I had a little goat, and his name was Pete. Didn't dare bend over, or he'd knock you off your feet. If I only had him now, I'd never gripe or grouse, because it's wonderful to have a little butter in the house.
It's your turn to say, come in, McGee.
Okay. Come in.
Oh, well, for goodness sakes, Mr. Wimple.
Hi, Wimp.
Hello, folks.
Have a chair, Mr. Wimple.
Oh, I can't stay but a minute, folks. I'm just delivering a message for Sweetie Face.
Whom to, Wimp?
To me, Mr. McGee.
Oh, what is the message, Mr. Wimple?
Get out of my sight for a while, Wimp.
Just what was the cause of this little misunderstanding, Mr. Wimple?
Well, Sweetie Face wanted me to give her breakfast in bed this morning. So, about 8 o'clock, I tippy-toed down to the kitchen and made some nice scrambled eggs and hot coffee and cinnamon toast and took it up to her. When she ate it, she had tears in her eyes.
Oh, you really got sentimental about it, eh, Wimp?
No. I'd put dry mustard on the toast instead of cinnamon. By mistake, of course.
Oh, well, Nat.
So Sweetie Face leaped out of bed and chased me all over the house. She finally cornered me in the fruit cellar. Do I smell a little bit of pickled beet?
I can't say you do, Wimp. However, I seem to detect a slight aroma of grape jelly.
Well, I'm getting even with her, believe me. I sneaked out into the garage and left all the lights burning in the car. Mm. Now, when she goes downtown, she'll have to crank it by hand.
Oh, well, she's strong enough to do it, isn't she, Mr. Wimple?
Oh, yes. But I left it in gear.
Left it in gear? My gosh, Wimple, Carl Rammer steers through the garage.
Oh, I don't think so, Mr. McGee. It's solid concrete. But I'll go and see. Goodbye, now.
Mr. Wimple.
What do you mean, poor little Mr. Wimple? He thinks up twice as many dirty tricks to play on her as she does on him. He's got the muscle, but he's got the brains.
He has until he gets home, at least, but if he ever...
Hello, folks.
Oh, hello, Mr. Wilcox.
Hi, Junior. Happy birthday. I hope you don't mind if I go ahead with my work.
Yeah, what's all the lumber for, pal? Building a doghouse?
Kite, Mr. Wilcox.
Kite, eh?
Yep, building a kite, Junior.
Gee, I wish you were working out in the kitchen, pal, and if you spilled something on the linoleum...
Yeah, but he isn't, though, Mr. Wilcox.
No. No, he isn't. Hmm. What kind of kite is it you're making, pal?
Box kite.
Hmm. Box kite, I see. Box kite.
No help, Mr. Wilcox?
I'm afraid not, Molly. Let me see now, Hey, are you making this just for fun, Fibber? Kind of filling up your leisure time, of which you have plenty because your house...
No,
is so...
I'm not.
Not, eh?
He's in a competition with Dr. Gamble, Mr. Wilcox. They've got a wager up as to who can build the best kite.
Wager, eh?
Hmm. Hi, George, I never thought I'd live to see the day Junior got stuck for an opening. Get Racine on the long-distance phone, Molly. Tell him to get in touch with Harry Von Zell.
Excuse me, pal.
Huh?
Look, about this kite of yours, what are you going to do with it?
My goodness, he's going to fly it, Mr. Wilcox. Didn't you ever fly kites when you were a lad?
Sure, did Fibber.
You're darn right I did, boy, up on the top of Kickapoo Hill in Peoria. Used to fly kites every day there was a wind. Made him do acrobatics, sent messages up the string.
Ah, messages, eh?
Oh, McGee, you shouldn't have done that.
Gee, I know a message I'd like to send up the string of your kite, pal, if you don't mind.
Now, wait a minute, Waxy. I didn't mean...
Write this down. Quote, housewives, why is Johnson self-polishing glow coat like a kite? Because it tops everything. Everybody looks up to it. It's effortless. And thereby hangs a tail.
There's no tail on a box kite, Mr. Wilcox.
Using self-polishing glow coat is like flying a kite. It's a breeze. Pour a little out on your linoleum, spread it around, let it dry 20 minutes or less, and presto, new beauty, new life to your tired and worn linoleum.
That's enough.
No rubbing, no buffing. Save yourself hours of housework. Have fun. Go fly kite. Gee, I've myself into it. I'm going home and make one, too. See you later.
I thought we had him there for a minute.
Oh, not him, dearie. He's as hard to pin down as a sunburnt wrestler. Well, I guess I'll go upstairs and let you get to work. Let me know now before you leave the house.
I will, Mommy, I will. Ah, there goes a good kid. She thinks I know what I'm doing building this site. And is she wrong? She was never more wronger in all her born. Come in, come in, come in.
Hi, mister.
Oh, hi, Teeny. Now, look at this. I'm a very busy man today. Scram, will you? Take a powder. Beat it. Hit the grit. Vamoo. Spade.
You mean you want me to go away, mister,
That might roughly be construed as my general idea, sis. Look, will you scram out of here if I give you a quarter?
I will for $2, I bet you.
$2? Why, you little...
Too much, huh?
Yeah.
Too much, huh? Okay. You come up a little, and I'll come down a little.
50 cents.
$1.
75 cents.
I think you will find, mister, that according to the OPA, that the ceiling price for getting little children to hit the grid is $1. Anyway, I gotta have a dollar.
Why?
Well, gee, I was going to go out with Willie Toops and fly my kite, but there isn't any wind today, so I thought I'd get one of those balloons.
What balloons?
One of those balloons the man is selling down on the corner, and they cost $1, and they're full of helium gas.
Helium, sis.
Sure, they're full of helium gas.
Helium. Yum, yum.
Gee, is it good to eat,
I was just saying
that. Okay. Anyway, these balloons are full of helium gas, and... Gee, if you ever let go of the string, they go right up in the air.
Hey, wait a minute. Helium gas, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Got a powerful lift to it, eh? Look, sis, I think we can make a deal, you and me.
Okay, mister. I'm sure that any business relations we will have will be sentimentally satisfactory, and I know...
Never mind the sales pitch, sis. Now, listen, here's what I want you to do, see? Take this dollar and get one of those helium balloons, and then come back. Gotta get them brakes fixed. Well, here's the fairgrounds, Molly.
Yeah, but I don't see anything of Dr. Gamble. Say, what happens with your wager if he doesn't show up?
He'll show up. He don't think any more of $10 than Heifetz does of his left forefinger. Come on, let's get out.
I'll bring your kite for you,
dearie. No. Nix. I'll bring the kite. I don't want anybody handling that kite but me, Sissy. And anyway, hi, Latrivia.
Hello, McGee. Good afternoon, Mr.
McGee. Hello, Mayor Latrivia.
Dr. Gamble told me about this little contest of yours, and I wanted to catch you before it started.
Why, Mr. Mayor?
About our campaign to remind people to remove their car keys, Mrs. McGee, to cut down car stealing and consequent juvenile delinquency.
What about it, Latrivia?
Oh, I thought you might be interested to know that the campaign is going splendidly.
Oh, isn't that grand.
The Girl Scouts are working on it also, bless their hearts. It's their birthday today, you know.
All of them? My gosh, ain't that wonderful? Imagine getting that many kids together of the same age on the same...
Yes, it's the birthday of the organization, McGee.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, I thought you'd like to know about the campaign, McGee. I'll be getting back to the office. You haven't much wind today for your kite flying, have you?
There's as much for me as there is for Doc Gamble, the trivia. Anyway, with my flight kind technique, I don't need much wind.
Don't know much about it myself. I went in more for baseball when I was a boy.
Oh, so did McGee, Mr. Mayor. He was the little pitcher with the big ears.
Center field. You know, I often get the urge to smack the old horse hide again, Latrivia.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You always carry a whip when you ride, McGee?
Ride?
Horseback, McGee.
Huh? My gosh, I haven't been on a horse for years, Latrivia.
Oh, in that case, I can understand why you'd want to use a whip. One is inclined to lose one's mastery of a horse in
Who
time.
Who loses mastery of what horses?
The one you said you'd like to smack the hide on.
You said that, McGee. You said you'd like to smack the old horse hide again.
Look. Any dunce knows that a horse hide is used to cover baseballs with.
That's no excuse for whipping the hide off a live horse, McGee. Personally, I think that anyone who would abuse a dumb animal like that...
What is this, anyway? I never dumb-treated any malt animal. I mean, I never horsed a whip in my... I never said...
Now, don't get excited, McGee. My goodness, suppose you did lose your temper once or twice and spank a horse. Nobody did.
But I didn't, I tell you. The trivia said
just
I...
Just a minute, McGee. When you said you liked to smack a horse's hide, I presumed you meant a whip. But when you said with your hand...
I never said that. I said I liked to smack a horse hide with a ball bat.
My goodness, with a ball bat. How terrible.
This is worse than I thought, McGee. Anyone who would strike a horse with a ball bat.
Dad, rat it, I never said I'd hide a hit from a ball horse. Or hit a ball horse with a hide bat, or ball hide. You said I, when I hit the bat, or smack the bejunior, I... You... Oh. Oh.
The trivia?
Yeah.
Now I know how it feels.
You didn't mind my pitching in on the mayor's side, did you, McGee?
No, I didn't mind. I had it coming.
You certainly did.
Yeah. And to think that you've put up with this for so long, Latrivia.
So long, McGee.
My gosh, I wonder what's keeping Doc Gamble. If he expects to win that $10, he'd
better
be...
Oh, there he is, McGee. Yoo-hoo! Dr. Gamble, here we are.
Look at him with his two-bit kite. Plastered together with adhesive tape and surgical sutures. Oh, hi, Doc. You ready for the contest?
Hey, look, McGee, what do you say we postpone this thing? There's no wind.
There's enough wind for me, Fatso. Put up your kite or put up your $10.
I don't see how you can fly a kite on a day like this either, McGee.
Particularly that kite he's got there. I never saw a box kite before that was closed on all six sides.
We ain't paying off on appearances, Rum-Dum. We're paying off on performance. Now, what do you want to do? Forfeit your sawbuck or get that lumpy-looking Valentine up in the air?
But we can't fly kites today, you little guppy.
Why not?
There's no wind.
You boys are making enough to start a small cyclone.
Well, I don't know about you, Aerosmith, but I'm flying my kite. One side there. Here I go.
Heavenly days, Doctor. Would you look at that?
Well, hypomydermic. Right straight up in the air. It's amazing.
Goodness.
I have a feeling that goodness has nothing to do with it.
Well, how about it, Doc? Satisfied? Mine is 100 feet up. 100 feet up and nary a tail waggle.
Okay, McGee. I don't know how you did it.
Oh.
Well, I never seen a kite yet that didn't know, man.
Hey, Mr. McGee. Mr. McGee, are you through with my helium balloon yet? Are you, Mr. Myers?
What was that, little girl? Helium balloon?
Why, Fibber McGee, did you actually
now, look,
do it?
Now, look, Doc, now, look. This was all a gag, see? The money went to charity either way.
And
so...
you deliberately put a helium balloon inside your kite, did you, McGee? So now you're crooking with gas.
I bet you. The same balloon you tried to buy from me, Dr. Gamble. Only... yeah, only he paid for it first.
Oh-ho.
McGee, I think you're right. I think this kid is a midget.
Oh, this is ridiculous.
Somebody said to me the other day, I have a wonderful slogan for Johnson's Wax. Floor beauty is wax deep. Well, that's a pretty good slogan at that. It's certainly true that even the first application of Johnson's Wax makes almost any floor more beautiful. Even old floors that have dulled with constant use acquire a soft, mellow sheen that highlights your entire home. This shining coat of Johnson's Wax does wonders for your furniture, too. Tabletops look richly polished when you wax them regularly. Chairs and sideboards glow and sparkle. Wax-polished ornaments and picture frames and other things also add immeasurably to the charm of your home. And think how much easier it will be to keep everything clean and bright, because dirt and dust don't readily cling to a smooth waxed surface. And remember that Johnson's Wax protects these lovely surfaces against dirt, wear, and spilled things. Why don't you try protective housekeeping with genuine Johnson's Wax, paste, liquid, or cream?
Clean up the mess in this living room, will you, dearie?
Okay.
Why did you build the kite in here anyway? Why didn't you build it in the basement?
All my tools were up here, that's why.
What were they doing up here?
I brought them up here to build my kite.
Oh.
Yeah. Good night.
Good night, all.
This is Harlow Wilcox speaking for the makers of Johnson's Wax products for home and industry, inviting you to be with us again next Tuesday night. Good night. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
It's time for My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball. Yes, it's the Gay Family series starring Lucille Ball with Richard Denning as Liz and George Cooper, two people who live together and like it. As we look in on the Coopers tonight, dinner is over and Liz is curled up in the living room, lost in a good book. George enters.
Liz, have you seen that book I was reading?
No. Why don't you look in the attic?
Attic? What's the book you're reading?
Now, George, you can read it later.
That's my book. Now, give it to me.
No. Oh, sit next to me on the couch, George, and we'll read it together.
Well, all right.
Here, now, I'll hold it. All right, George, are you ready to turn the page yet?
No, I didn't read a word. You were mumbling so loud I couldn't concentrate.
Oh, well, there was nothing on that page anyway. Madge tried to poison Gordon, but he found out and ran her over with his car.
Nothing on it, huh?
No. Next page.
Liz, would you please stop mumbling?
I'm just reading.
Well, can't you read with your mouth closed?
Okay.
Oh, never mind. Here, you take the book. I'll read something else.
No, wait a minute. I have a good idea. I'll read it out loud to both of us.
I'm a fool, but go ahead.
All right, here we go. As Gordon drove down the highway, an idle thought crossed his mind. Why did I run over Madge, he wondered. Suddenly, he heard a sound in the back seat.
It was Madge.
Yes, it was Madge. She was beaten and torn. Her clothes were in shreds, and blood poured from her many wounds. Their eyes met. Then, in a feeble voice, Madge said, "You don't like me, do you?"
What?
Suddenly, she gained strength. "Go ahead, admit it," she shouted. "You hate me."
Liz.
"You hate me, don't you?"
Liz.
"Don't you?"
Liz. You have to shout.
I can't help it. I can't help it, George. I get carried away.
Go on, but control yourself.
He started slowly toward her, climbing over the seat. Madge's eyes showed terror. Slowly, he came closer, closer, closer.
I still think we should have called before we came over, Rudolph. It isn't polite to drop in on people unexpectedly.
Lotus Bud, these aren't people. These are Liz and George. They're our friends.
Well, Emily Post wouldn't do it.
Of course not. She doesn't even know them.
You know what I mean. Well, we're here. You might as well ring the bell.
All right.
No! You wouldn't
mock
me.
It's Liz, girl.
Yes. Yes, and apparently she's done something to annoy George, boy.
Go ahead, you cad. Hit me, I dare you.
I dare you, I dare you, I dare you! Oh! Right in the eye.
She went, one I dare you, too far.
George hit her.
Yes, yes. I wonder how he managed to hold off this long.
Rudolph.
Well, I guess it's safe to ring the bell now.
Don't you dare.
For their sake. When they hear the bell, they'll go to neutral corners.
We can't break in on them at a time like this.
Please?
No. We'll go down and phone from the drugstore and tell them we'd like to come over.
Oh, I thought you didn't want to go in at all.
Oh, don't be silly. I want to see how this comes out as much as you do.
Well, let's hurry down to the drugstore. Personally, I think George has the first round on point.
Later that night, Madge was crying softly in her room, waiting for the phone. They said they'd call if they found Gordon's body when they dragged the river. She waited and waited. Wouldn't that phone ever ring?
Ah! They found Gordon's body.
That was our phone ringing.
Ooh. I'll get it. Hello?
Liz?
Yes?
How are you, girl?
I'm fine.
Liz, this is Iris.
Yeah, I know it.
Iris, your friend, whom you may turn to in a moment of crisis.
Iris, have you been nipping at the sherry again? What are you talking about?
All right, be close-mouthed. Rudolph and I are down at the drugstore, and we thought maybe we'd drop by your arena.
Well, that would be fine, Iris.
Unless you don't want to see us right now for some reason.
Why wouldn't we want to see you?
I don't know. I thought maybe something might have just struck you.
Oh, don't be silly. Come on over. We're just spending a quiet evening at home.
Oh, well, all right. Oh, anything we can bring over, girl? Ice cream? Candy? Bandages?
We don't need anything. Come on over.
All right. See you in a few minutes. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
What did Iris want?
Help me clean up the living room, George. They're coming over.
What's the matter with the living room?
What's the matter with it? Well, look around you. Newspapers open, cigarette ashes in the trays. Oh, I'm glad they called first.
Oh, gracious. So am I.
All right, George.
How mortified I'd have been if they walked in and caught us wallowing in our pig pen.
Never mind, Porky. Clean up.
Liz, this is the way a living room is supposed to look, lived in. Besides, the Atterburys are our friends.
Put your shoes on.
Why, they know I have feet.
George, put your shoes on and help me clean up. Now pick up those papers. I'll get this ashtray. Well, let's put that book away, too. Throw it to me.
Okay. Here, catch.
Go ahead. Oh! Oh, my eye!
Oh, honey, I'm sorry. Did it hit you on the eye?
Yes.
Oh, I should have handed it to you.
Oh, no, it's my fault. I should have caught it. Oh, gosh, it sure hurts.
Oh, you better put something on it, Liz.
I'll get Katie to fix me a cold compress.
Let me see it. Mm. Gee, you really must have gotten a whack. Mm. It's starting to color up already.
Oh, that's all I need, a black eye. Oh, that's probably the Atterbury. You let them in, George. I'll go fix my eye.
All right.
Hi, folks. George boy. Liz girl?
What have you done with Liz?
Oh, she'll be right here. Come on in. Hey, give me your coat. I'm glad you dropped in. We were just having a quiet evening at home.
He's a cruel customer, isn't he?
Fast, too. He doesn't have a scratch on him.
Hi, Iris. Hi, Mr. Atterbury.
Liz.
Oh, huh. Oh, you poor dear.
What? Oh, my eye.
Yes.
Well, how did it happen?
Oh, George slugged me.
Yep. Yep, hope I finally let her have it.
What's the matter? You come over and stay with us, Liz.
Oh, now, just a second, Iris.
Don't speak to her, you cat.
What?
You actually did slug her.
Oh, listen, I was just kidding.
Don't protect him, Liz. He isn't worth it.
Really? Nobody ever believes a real story of a black eye, so I made one up.
As we look in on the Coopers again, it's the next morning. Iris Atterbury has been waiting out in front of Liz's house. As soon as George leaves for the bank, she rushes in to console Liz.
Liz, girl, how's your eyes?
Oh, it still hurts. How does it look?
Ooh!
It's a real shiner, isn't it?
Ooh, that rat really gave you a mouse.
Rat? Listen, Iris.
Look, now that the big brood is out of here, what really happened last night?
I told you. George tossed a book to me. I missed it, and it hit me in the eye.
Ooh, you're stubborn. Look, I know that's the story for publication, but what's the gory truth?
Iris, how many... What do you think happened?
George got mad and popped you in the eye.
George popped me in the eye?
Well, at last you admit it.
What?
What are the details? I want a blow-by-blow description.
You won't be happy till you get a good, juicy one, will you?
No.
Now, all right, Iris. It seems George and I were sitting around after dinner, and we had a little argument.
Yes?
Close your mouth, Iris. You're drooling on the rug. Where was I?
George pulled you across the table by the hair and slugged you.
Did I say that?
Yes. Well, go ahead. What did he do to top that?
You haven't left him much choice. He slugged me, as you say,
mm-hmm.
And I fell down, and as I lay there, whimpering and cowering...
Who kicked you?
All right, he kicked me.
Where?
Right between the living room and the den.
Did it hurt terribly?
Well, wasn't too bad. His shoes were off at the time. But he has sharp toenails. He's a slasher. Oh, our sheets don't last 2 weeks.
Go on, Liz.
Go on.
Well, yes, you haven't told me the real dirt yet.
I haven't?
No. What made him so mad?
I don't know.
You do?
No. We were talking about the weather, and I told him I was in love with somebody else, and he said,
wait,
go away.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Back up, girl. You told him you were in love with another?
Yes.
Another man?
No, a Shetland pony.
Come on, girl. You know what I meant. Who's this pony boy?
Well, oh, he's wonderful. We've been meeting secretly for years.
Is it anyone I know?
Yes.
Who?
Oh, I can't tell you his name.
It wouldn't be Cricket, would it?
No, it's somebody else. He'll just have to remain my mystery lover.
Someone I know.
Huh?
Oh, I hate you. I'm going to be up all night wondering.
Iris, do me a favor, will you?
What?
Don't blab this all over town.
Oh, you know me, girl.
Yes, that's why I say don't blab this all over town.
Thank you.
you want to see me, Mr. Atterbury?
Yes, I did. Come in and close the door, George.
Yes, sir.
George Boyne, I want to tell you something.
Yes, sir.
I'm older than you are.
Oh, I know that, sir.
That's not what I want to tell you. I want to have a father-son, a man-to-man talk with you. In our civilization today, the art of fisticuffs belongs in the ring, not in the home.
Oh, now, Mr. Atterbury, please.
Huh? Now, I grant you that Liz is a very exasperating woman, and at times I've entertained the thought of striking her myself.
But, Mr. Atterbury...
Huh? It's perfectly understandable that a man must discipline his wife once in a while. But a punch in the eye, as satisfying as it may be to the soul...
Mr. Atterbury, for heaven's sake...
Hush, hush. George, in the interest of your marriage, I'm going to tell you something I've never told anyone before.
What?
I struck Iris once.
You did?
Yes. And afterwards, I felt terrible.
You were ashamed?
No. She beat me to a pulp.
Look, Mr. Atterbury, could I please say something without your hushing me?
To proceed.
We were cleaning up the living room. I threw a book to Liz. She didn't catch it, and it hit her in the eye.
Are you through?
Yes. Do you believe me?
No. Now, why don't you send her some flowers, boy? At least apologize.
I won't send anything. There's no reason to send flowers or apologize. I'll be in my office.
You. Well, I'll just have to help him along. Oh, Miss Roberts, I'll be back in a moment. I'm going down to the florist. Good afternoon, Miss Benson.
Hello, Mr. Atterbury.
How's the flower business these days?
Oh, I've been busy as a bee all morning.
Well, I'd like 2 dozen roses, and I want them delivered this afternoon.
Oh, our truck's just leaving.
Oh, well, hold it up while I write a card.
Hold the truck.
Okay.
I'll get the flowers while you write the card.
Yeah, here's the card.
All righty. I'll just put it in this box with the roses, close it up, and off it goes. Here, Bill.
Got it.
They'll be delivered right away.
Good. I want those flowers to get there before her husband gets home.
Mr. Atterbury.
Oh, you don't understand. You know Liz Cooper?
George Cooper's wife?
Yes.
I understand.
You do not. They had a little spat, and he won't apologize, so I'm sending flowers to Liz in his name. Wait till she sees the card.
What did it say?
Oh, well, if I do say so myself, it was sheer genius. It said, "Dearest sweetheart."
Oh, that is good.
There's more. Oh. Nothing that has happened can dim my love for you.
Oh.
Signed, adoringly, Rudolph. To the Coopers and try to intercept them.
I'm sorry.
Well, you should be. It's all your fault, you bumbling... you. Thank goodness the coast is clear. I don't see any flower boxes. Maybe he hasn't been here yet. Now, if I can just sneak in...
There's a man in the house.
It's not a man, Katie. It's me.
Mr. Atterbury, what are you doing sneaking in the front door?
I haven't time to explain now. Has Liz received any flowers today?
No, not that I know of.
What's the matter, Katie?
Nothing, Mrs. Cooper.
Oh, are you ready to go, Iris?
Iris?
Is she here?
Yes, sir. She's upstairs with Mrs. Cooper.
Oh, gad. She must have seen me here.
Well, they're going out shopping in a minute.
Oh, good. I'll hide till they go. Then I'll get the card from those flowers.
Well, I don't know what it's all about, but you can hide in the hall closet.
Bless you, Katie.
Iris, you think this veil hides my eye enough?
Pull your hat down a little more.
How's that?
That's fine. Hmm? Aren't you ever going to tell me who your mystery lover is?
No.
Why not?
Because you're a big blabbermouth.
Mrs. Cooper, you haven't told me what you wanted for dinner.
A pork chop to eat and a steak for my eye.
All right.
I'll get it, Katie. Yes?
Flowers for Mrs. Cooper.
Oh, thank you. Flowers for me. I wonder who they're from.
Well, they're probably from M.L.
M.L.?
Mystery lover.
Oh, Iris, they're from George.
They're from George.
All right, here, you read the card, and if I know, you'll find out who my mystery lover is.
Okay.
What does it say?
It says, dear sweetheart, nothing that has happened can dim my love for you. Adoringly, Rudolph.
Rudolph?
Rudolph!
Rudolph? Rudolph who?
Rudolph who?
You think these flowers are from Rudolph Atterbury?
They aren't from Rudolph Valentino. My husband. My pitiful, fat old husband. Your mystery lover. It just doesn't seem possible.
It isn't. Why would I fall for a broken down old goat like Mr. Atterbury?
How dare you talk like that about Rudolph?
Why, you said the same thing yourself.
I know, but I can wrap him. He's my old goat. I'm going home. Where's my coat?
It's in the hall closet.
Oh, wait till I see that Rudolph.
Oh, there is not.
Rudolph Atterbury, is that you?
Don't be ridiculous, Iris.
There's nobody here but us galoshes.
If it isn't old mystery ghost.
Mr. Atterbury, what are you doing in there?
What are you doing in there?
Oh, shut up.
Now, Lotus Bud, if you'll just give me a chance to explain.
Well, all right, Rudolph. You get your chance. Step out of the closet.
Thanks.
Now, you can explain, but there's something I want to do first.
What's that? Oh, my eye!
Katie, make that toothpaste!
Hi, everybody.
Oh, George, you're just in time. This is awful.
Oh, what happened?
I'll tell you what happened. Iris came up and punched me in the eye like...
Ow!
Oh!
What was that for?
That's for starting this whole thing by hitting Liz in the first place.
Katie, make that three shakes. Now, look, let's get one thing settled right now. George did not hit me.
I'll show you exactly what happened, Iris. He took a book like this and he threw it like this.
Favorite Husband has been presented through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
By
transcription. Colgate Dental Cream to clean your breath while you clean your teeth and help stop tooth decay, and Palmolive Shave Creams for a smoother, more comfortable way to shave, bring you Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. Episode of Our Miss Brooks, under the direction of Al Lewis. Well, many of the traditional basketball rivalries were settled during the past week, and Madison High School, where Our Miss Brooks teaches English, was no exception. Their big game with Clay City High was scheduled for Friday night, and last Wednesday morning, while driving her to school, Walter Denton, the team's manager, tried to sell Miss Brooks a ticket.
I'm sorry, Walter, but I don't think I'm interested.
Don't think you're interested? But, Miss Brooks, that's treason.
How much are the seats?
$1 apiece.
If this be treason, make the most of it. Look, Walter, I don't want you to think that I'm lacking in school spirit. The reason I haven't attended more games this season is because of embarrassment. Our team was just awful. 16 straight defeats, isn't it?
This year. Altogether, it's 39. But the important game is Friday night with Clay City.
I know. I saw the Clay City game last year. I'll never forget how miserable I felt when I left that gym. The score was Clay City 92, Madison 6.
You shouldn't have left. They really clobbered us in the second half.
Well, I hope we make a better showing this year, if only to keep our beloved principal's blood pressure from reaching a new high.
Well, I don't like to be prematurely optimistic, Miss Brooks, but I met a fellow on our campus yesterday who may make a big difference in the outcome of Friday night's game.
You mean through him we have a chance of winning?
Definitely.
I'm surprised at you, Walter. You should have turned him into the district attorney immediately.
Now, this is a kid who went to Clay City High until his folks moved into our district last week. And now he's going to transfer to Madison. And, Miss Brooks, the minute he told me his name, I knew he'd be a cinch to make our basketball team. Guess who it was?
Lionel Barrymore.
I'm serious, Miss Brooks. Now, this guy happens to be the greatest scholastic basketball player in this area. And what a build on him. He must be 6'4".
Who is this super kid, Walter?
Well, his name is Tex Barton. Of course, Tex is just a nickname because his family came to Clay City from Texas.
Sounds reasonable.
His real name is Vic Barton. Don't you remember the fellow who scored over 50 points against us in the game last year?
Well, now that you mention it, I do remember a boy named Vic Barton.
Well, Tex Barton and Vic Barton are the same person.
No wonder he's so tall.
Well, here we are, Miss Brooks. Oh, say, I think that's Tex gone toward school now. After you, Miss Brooks.
Thanks, Walter.
Hey, wait up, Tex. I want to talk to you.
Well, if it ain't Walter Denton, I'm sure glad to... Oh, excuse me, ma'am. I reckon you're Walter's mother.
Have another reckon on me.
This is Miss Brooks, Tex. She teaches English here.
English?
Yes, it's the language spoken just north of Texas. Well, I've got to be getting in now. Nice to have met you, Tex.
Most people feel that way. But we really didn't meet hardly. Would you mind if I joined you after school and we chinned for a spell?
Well, I'm afraid I'll have to take my chin home after school. I've got to help Mrs. Davis fix dinner tonight.
Now, that's awful decent of you, ma'am. I'll be happy to have dinner with you.
Huh?
You see, my folks will be out visiting tonight. After I spend what I got on me for lunch, I won't be able to afford no dinner unless I gets me an invite. And, of course, down home, we don't think twice about sharing a grub with a stranger. Yes, sir, there's nothing like splitting your chow to help you get acquainted.
Well, get a pencil. I'll tell you how to get to my chuck wagon.
That won't be necessary, Miss Brooks. I'll bring Tex over myself at 6 o'clock sharp. And ma'am, thanks a heap for the invite.
You're welcome, Hoppy.
Miss Miss Brooks, suppose you take Tex into Mr. Conklin's office. You can help him get registered real quick. And speed is of the essence, as you know.
Yes, I do. All right, Walter, you park your car, and I'll take Tex in with me.
That's mighty obliging of you, ma'am. Do you think the principal will be willing to swear me in this morning?
Well, it's all according to his mood, Tex. I can promise you one thing, though. When we get to his office, you'll either be sworn in or at. Mr. Conklin's office is right down this hall, Tex.
Well, all right, Daddy, but you don't have to bite my head off. Hello, Miss Brooks. Daddy's having one of his tantrums again. Well, what have we here?
Oh, this is Tex Barton, Harriet. Tex, this is Harriet Conklin.
Howdy.
Hello. You're a long one, aren't you?
Some, ma'am.
And cuter than most. Are you going to be a student here?
I sure hope so. Now.
Say, you're really something.
I try to be. If I ain't too bold, miss, I wouldn't exactly call you a little old lump of sugar, but I wouldn't want to leave you too close to my little old pinto either.
I wish I know what to tell my little old stomach. Now, you'll have to excuse us, Harriet. We've got to see your father right away.
All right, Miss Brooks. See you later, Tex.
Goodbye.
Who goes there?
Two friends, sir. Two unarmed friends.
Come in.
Good morning, Mr. Conklin. I wouldn't disturb you, sir, but it's quite important.
One moment, please. So it's finally happened, Miss Brooks. Mr. Boynton has taken you to the zoo once too often.
The zoo?
Don't look now, but one of the giraffes has followed you to see.
Tex, I'd like you to meet Madison's principal, Mr. Osgood Conklin.
Howdy.
What do you know? It talks. Now, what can I do for you, and please be brief?
I thought you might check his transfer papers, Mr. Conklin. Tex wants to enroll as soon as possible.
Well, I suppose that can be arranged. From what high school are you transferring?
Clay City.
Fine. I'm always happy to meet any boy who comes from... Clay City?
Yes, sir. Our principal, Mr. Brill, told me a lot about you, Mr. Conklin. But I'm glad to meet you anyhow.
Oh, you are. Miss Brooks, kindly remove this elongated St. Bernard from my office.
Now, hold on there. Who are you calling a St. Bernard?
Oh, don't be angry, Tex. Mr. Conklin didn't mean anything derogatory. You two have got to be friends. Now go ahead, Tex. Give him your paw. I mean, shake hands.
Step aside, ma'am. Now listen to me, Mr. Conklin.
You listen to me. You go right back to Jason Brill and tell him we don't want any of his Clay City dunces cluttering up Madison.
Oh, please, Mr. Conklin. You can't know on this short notice whether Tex is a dunce or not.
That's right. You ain't got no proof, no how. But if you don't want me to go to your school, I'll just go right on back to Clay City.
Oh, wait, Tex. You'll be glad to welcome Tex into Madison, Mr. Conklin, if you'll just let me tell you why you've got to accept him.
I have got to accept no one. Madison High is my kingdom, Miss Brooks, and the choice of the subjects therein is my choice and mine alone. The interview is at an end.
But, Mr. Conklin...
That is all dismissed!
Aye, aye, sir. Come on, Tex. I'll show you to the door. Tex, I'll talk to him alone and bring you back when he's in a better mood.
Okay, Miss Brooks. You've sure been mighty decent to me, ma'am. Hasta la vista.
Mm-hmm. Adios, hombre. Mr. Conklin... Sir. Sire.
Yes?
far be it from me to question your motives, but I'm afraid you've hurt that boy's feelings.
Well, perhaps I was a bit harsh with the lad, but he caught me at a bad time. I just hung up on Jason Brill when you both arrived. That malevolent old devil phoned just to taunt me about the basketball game Friday night. He got me so upset, I bet him a new hat on the outcome of the game before I remembered the results of last year's contest.
That was disastrous, wasn't it?
They clobbered us. I dug up the newspaper account of the game from my pile. I've got it right here. Now, look at this headline. Clay City ekes out victory over Madison 124-7.
That must have been quite a second half. There's an interesting subhead, too. It says, wild-eyed spectator leaps on court and bites basketball. Ushers eject Osgood Conklin.
That story is a bald-faced lie.
I know it is, Mr. Conklin. I was there. You bit the referee.
I merely broke his whistle. What burns me up the most, though, is this reminder that after the game, Madison was presented with the symbol of defeat, Cornelius the Goat.
Let's see. Oh, here's that part. Cornelius must be fed and housed on the campus of the losing team for the entire school year. After 4 years of defeat, the goat becomes the permanent property of the humiliated institution. Well, that's a switch on a loving cup.
Let me remind you, Miss Brooks, that Madison has lost 3 games in a row to Clay City. If we lose this one, that bleating monstrosity will be on our hands forever.
Mr. Conklin, do you remember a boy named Barton who scored over 50 points against us for Clay City?
Barton. Oh, of course I remember now. He ran us ragged.
Well, that happens to be Tex Barton, the boy you just gave the old heave-ho.
What? And he wanted to transfer to Madison? Miss Brooks. Dear Miss Brooks. We've got to do something. You've got to do something. Anything.
Calm down, Mr. Conklin. All isn't lost. He's coming to my house for dinner tonight, and I'm sure I can undo some of the damage your temper has done.
That is my problem, Miss Brooks. I'll be happy to have dinner at your house tonight. After all, in Texas, we always say there's nothing like splitting your chow to help get better acquainted.
So I've heard. And the way I figure, Eff and I can wrestle up enough grub, we might get so well acquainted we'd never have to talk to each other again.
Brush your teeth with Colgate. Colgate dental cream, it cleans your breath.
What a toothpaste.
Whitens your teeth.
Colgate toothpaste.
Cleans your breath.
What a toothpaste.
Whitens your teeth.
Colgate dental cream cleans your breath while it cleans your teeth. And the Colgate way stops tooth decay best. Yes, the Colgate way is the most thoroughly proved and accepted home method of oral hygiene known today. Over 2 years' research showed brushing teeth right after eating with Colgate dental cream helped stop more decay for more people than ever before reported in dentifrice history. The Colgate way stopped tooth decay best. No other dentifrice, ammoniated or not, offers such conclusive proof. And you should know that Colgate's, while not mentioned by name, was the only toothpaste used in the research on tooth decay recently reported in Reader's Digest. So always follow the Colgate way to clean your breath while you clean your teeth. And stop tooth decay best.
Brush your teeth with Colgate. Colgate dental cream, it cleans your breath.
What a toothpaste.
Why cleans your teeth.
And the Colgate way stops tooth decay best.
Well, when lunchtime arrived, I hurried to the school cafeteria to meet Mr. Boynton for lunch. But he was over 10 minutes late. From the explanation he gave when he did arrive, it was obvious he had been detained by someone even nearer and dearer to his heart than I am.
Well, I'm sorry, Miss Brooks, but I had to stop by the gym and untie Cornelius the goat. I'm the only person at school who pays any attention to the poor beast.
I know. Pull up a window and sit down.
Thank you.
Oh, before I forget, I brought a little surprise in for you. It's a box of French chocolates.
For me? But it isn't my birthday or Christmas or anything.
I know it. Can't I give you a box of candy if I feel like it?
You certainly can. And it's very sweet of you, Mr. Boynton. I wish I could do something to show my appreciation.
Well, now that you mention it, I'll be very happy to have dinner at your house tonight.
Good. For a minute there, I thought I'd have to keep coaxing you. You'll be more than welcome, Mr. Boynton, but I think I should warn you. There'll be quite a crowd over tonight. You see, when I was in Mr. Conklin's office this morning...
Oh, Walter Denton told me all about it, Miss Brooks. As I understand it, Mr. Conklin insulted the boy, and now he's got to woo him into playing basketball for Madison. Heavens knows the team can use him, and I'd like to help get him into the fold. What time does the wooing begin, Miss Brooks?
Shall we say about 9 o'clock?
9?
Yes, I should be able to get rid of Tex by 8:30.
Dinner's almost ready, Connie. You've been a big help, dear.
But I didn't do anything, Mrs. Davis.
I know, but you stayed out of my way all afternoon. Now, you better get back into the living room and join Tex.
Oh, he's all right, Mrs. Davis. I gave him last Sunday's funnies to read and a box of French chocolates to nibble on. You know, you wouldn't think to look at that kid that he's Vic Barton, the famous Clay City basketball star.
He'd have to be something like that. But why is Mr. Conklin so anxious to get him to enroll at Madison?
Oh, it's a long story, Mrs. Davis. I'll give you a rundown after dinner.
Pardon me, ladies, but I got a little lonesome in the living room. The Loof-Lerpas are all gone, Miss Brooks.
The Loof-Lerpas?
Those French candies you gave me to nibble on. I'll set the box on the sink. Is there something I can do to help get chow ready, Miss Davis?
Yes, there is, Tex. You can get the silverware out, if you will.
Oh, that's the front door. I'll answer it. Just make yourself at home, Tex.
I will.
Well, Tex, Miss Brooks has told me what a basketball star you were at Clay City.
Now, I wonder what made her say that. I'm Vic Barton, Miss Davis. Miss Brooks must have me mixed up with my brother Vince.
Oh?
Shucks, I never played no varsity basketball at Clay City.
Oh, Tex, will you come in here, please? We've got company.
Right away, ma'am. I'll be back to help you in a minute, Miss Davis.
It's all right, Tex. Take your time.
Look who's here, Tex. It's Mr. Conklin.
Well, slip us five, Pod.
What's the matter with him?
Well, Mr. Conklin wants you to know that... that he was just teasing this morning when he threw you out of his office.
Why, of course, my boy. I do that to all new pupils. It's sort of an initiation. Now, although we don't place too much emphasis on athletics at Madison, I just knew you'd want a star in some sport or other, so I brought you this all-wool sweater, and I had your varsity letter sewn on it in advance. You see, a big M.
What, Clay City? We always spelled varsity with a V. You was only funning this morning, and you really want me to join up, I guess I can think it over a spell longer.
Please do, my boy.
I got to get back to the kitchen now. Miss Davis wants me to get out the silverware.
Silverware? And risk cutting those beautiful basket-shooting hands on a sharp knife? I should say not. I'll get the silverware myself.
Be right there. Well, come in, Mr. Boynton.
Thanks, Miss Brooks. I'm sorry I'm late. Oh, this must be Tex.
Howdy.
This is Mr. Boynton, Tex.
Howdy. I brought this little gift for you. It's sort of a welcome to Madison present.
Gosh, what is it, Mr. Boynton?
It's a knee pad, a brand new one.
Those are the best kind.
I'm sure grateful, Mr. Boynton. I'd offer you one of the French chocolates Miss Brooks gave me, but I'm afraid they're plumb gone.
French chocolates? Miss Brooks, that's the same candy I gave...
Oh, we're doing a big business tonight. Come on in. It's open.
Hiya, folks. Here you are, Tex, old boy. Here's a little present for you.
For me?
Yeah, I noticed you ride a bicycle, so I bought you this master padlock to put on it when you leave it in front of school.
You mean somebody might steal it?
Please, Tex, that's one thing about Madison High. There's never been a master padlock stolen.
I don't get it. Why is everybody being so all fired nice to me? First, Mr. Conklin gives me a sweater. Then Mr. Boynton brings me a knee pad. You give me this lock. And, of course, Miss Brooks gave me a whole box of Luflerpa chocolates.
What? But that's the same candy I gave Mr. Boynton last night.
Walter!
We'd better send the box to J. Edgar Hoover. Must be enough fingerprints on it to keep him busy for months.
Tex, would you please put a new light bulb in the kitchen ceiling for me? We don't have a stepladder.
I'll be right with you, Miss Davis. Excuse me, folks. I'll be back before you can say Sam Houston.
You can say Dick Dallas, too. I've got to talk to Walter. So, you gave this candy to Mr. Boynton, Walter. Would you mind telling me what prompted that unusual action?
It's a lie. The fact that Mr. Boynton gave us a biology test this morning, which if I didn't pass would make me ineligible to manage the basketball team Friday night, has nothing to do with it.
Walter, I'm surprised at you. Why, that's nothing short of bribery. And I suppose I'll have to reimburse you for the chocolates you indirectly donated.
Oh, that won't be necessary, Miss Brooks. I got them for nothing from Mr. Conklin. Only he doesn't know it.
What do you mean?
Well, I helped Harriet burn some rubbish yesterday, so she told me to help myself to some candy on the way out of her house. Well, I didn't see the jelly bean she meant for me to take, so I just latched onto the box of French chocolates. It wasn't until today that Harriet told me that old Marble had bought the chocolates for a special occasion. Gee, if he finds out I swiped him, he'll drug me till I'm simple.
Oh, that's absurd, Walter. Mr. Conklin wouldn't lay a hand on you.
It's not his hand I'm worried about. When he gets through drop-kicking the seat of my pants, he'll look like the lobby of Grauman's Chinese.
Well, take it easy, Raffles. Nobody's going to put the finger on you around here.
Well, everything's working out just splendidly, Miss Brooks. Hello, Mr. Martin.
Good evening,
Mr.
Conklin.
Good evening, sir.
I have the honor to inform you all of the fact that, thanks to my warm and endearing personality, Tex Barton has consented to enroll at Madison High immediately.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Oh, congratulations, sir.
You're a Lulu Marblehead.
Now, you men stay right here. I'll go out and get the dishes to the dinner table. I thought I'd better get the dishes, Mrs. Davis.
All right, dear. I just checked what we'll need on the kitchen table. Did Mr. Conklin tell you the thrilling news about Tex here?
Yes, he did. Well, needless to say, Tex, we're all delighted to have Clay City's top basketball star as a Madison pupil.
Hold on a minute, Miss Brooks. About that basketball stuff, there's something you ought to know.
You mustn't try to carry so many dishes at once, Connie.
Oh, I can manage them all. What were you saying, Tex?
Well, it's like I was telling Miss Davis. You must have me mixed up with my brother Vince Barton. I never played no basketball for Clay City.
Heard a crash. What happened?
Hey, what is it, Miss Brooks?
Nothing. I merely dropped a few dishes.
Oh, let us help you pick them up. Here, I'll take the plates.
Now, I'll take the soup bowls, and I'll take the cups and saucers. You've got to be more careful, Miss Brooks. Here, you can hold this large platter.
Thank you.
Shucks, I don't know what made Miss Brooks get so skittish all of a sudden.
Oh, just forget it, boy. Forget it.
I don't understand. All I said to her was that she had me mixed up with my brother Vince, and that I never played no basketball for Clay City.
Well, let's make it unanimous.
Of course, there's one point I think I ought to clear up. I said I never played no basketball for Clay City, but I didn't say I never played no basketball. It's just that this being my freshman year, I wasn't able to straighten out my credits till a couple of weeks ago.
Nevertheless, the fact remains.
I don't like to brag, but after I worked out with the team for a few days, why, all the coaches agreed my brother Vince was almost as good as I am.
Nevertheless, the fact remains.
Almost as good as you are?
Yes, sir.
If I said it once, I'll say it twice. This calls for a celebration. Is dinner ready, Mrs. Avis?
Not quite, Connie. It'll take about a half hour yet. Why don't you all go in the living room and wait?
Oh, but I'm starved. If I could just take something with me to nibble on, I'd say, what's this? Loofler for chocolates. Well, I see we have another prankster in our midst.
A prankster?
Yes, yes. This candy is sold only in novelty shops. I bought mine early this year for fear they'd run out. I'm going to send a box to Jason Brill on April 1st.
But I don't understand, Mr. Conklin. What's in the chocolate?
What isn't in them? There's enough pepper and spice in each one to have Brill clutching his bloated bay window for hours.
Very funny.
Are you positive these are the same kind of chocolates you bought, Mr. Conklin? Loof Lerpa?
Loof Lerpa is simply April Fool spelled backwards.
Candy, it would taste funny, wouldn't it?
Well, that's the beauty of this particular brand. It's got a sweet coating that disguises the pepper. It takes about an hour to work, but once it catches on, oh, brother. Oh, brother.
Tex, Tex, speak to me. Why are you turning that color?
I'm a-getting out of here.
Getting out? But why? What's wrong, boy?
I'm a-going back to Clay City.
No, but Tex, you... At least nobody never tried to poison me down there.
I'm beginning to feel like an emotional yo-yo.
Well, you'll find it out sooner or later, Mr. Conklin. Tex ate a whole box of those candies.
What? But how did he get them?
They were a gift.
A gift? But he's liable to be laid up for a week. And if he doesn't play Friday night, we're certain to get possession of that reeking goat, Cornelius! Now then, Mr. Boynton, Denton, Miss Brooks, I demand to know who gave that candy to Tex Barton.
Mr. Conklin, I can disclose the identity of the culprit with one word.
And that word is...
Barden as our Miss Brooks returns in just a moment, but first...
You get smoother, more comfortable, comfortable shaves by shaving the palm olive brushless way. Get smoother, more comfortable, comfortable shaves the palm olive brushless way.
Hey, that's a fact, men. You can get smoother, yes, more comfortable shaves the palm olive brushless shaving cream way. Just rub velvet-smooth palm olive brushless into your beard. Whiskers actually protects your skin by providing a soft film that floats your razor's cutting edge. Remember, over 1,200 men tested the palm olive brushless shaving cream way following directions on the package. And no matter how they shaved before, 3 out of 4 reported beards easier to cut, less razor pull, smoother, more comfortable, yes, more comfortable shaves. So, men, try the palm olive brushless way yourself. Even in cold or hard water, you get a close, clean shave. And a smoother, more comfortable, yes, a more comfortable shave.
You get smoother, more comfortable, comfortable shaves the palm olive brushless way.
Boom. Next time you shave, try the palm olive brushless shaving cream way. Now, once again, here is Eve Arden.
This week, the Colgate Palmolive Peat Company salutes the Girl Scouts of the United States of America on their 39th birthday. Their ceaseless work, training, and activities have proved to all of us that good scouts today are good citizens tomorrow. Congratulations, Girl Scouts.
This is Vern Smith reminding you to tune in next week to another Our Miss Brooks show brought to you by Palmolive Shave Creams for a smoother, more comfortable way to shave and Colgate Dental Cream to clean your breath while you clean your teeth and help stop tooth decay. Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, is produced by Larry Burns, written by Al Lewis and Joe Quillen, with the music of Wilbur Hatch.
Listen to this. With Marvelous Bell, V-E-L, you can save 90% of dishwashing work.
of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
This is Ronald Coleman.
And Benita Coleman.
Inviting you to join us again on the campus of Ivy College.
Now, the Halls of Ivy. Welcome again to Ivy. Ivy College, that is, in the town of Ivy, USA. Most institutions such as Ivy seem quickly to acquire an atmosphere of age and permanence, so much so that it's hard to imagine a day when they were brash new infants in the field of education. But everything good has a beginning, and Ivy's beginning is commemorated each year at the annual Founders Day celebrations. This year's honored guest is Ivy's oldest living alumnus, Silas Livingston, who arrived late last night at the home of President William Todd Hunter Hall. And so we find Dr. Hall's lovely wife, Victoria, quietly planning a breakfast tray in the kitchen.
Now, let me see. I think I'll give him one soft scrambled egg, the toast, the fruit juice, farina, and green tea. Toddy, if you were 91 years old, is that about what you'd like for breakfast?
Victoria, my love, when I am 91 and you are a girl of, say...
Easy does it. I'll never admit to more than 73.
And you are a slip of a girl of 73. Breakfast will no longer be eaten. Meals will be a matter of chemically concentrated food. A red capsule for breakfast, a white capsule for lunch, a blue capsule for dinner.
And for political banquets, all of them. And three cheers for the red, white, and blue. Anyway, there won't be any more jokes about the bride's biscuits.
No, the comedians will have to modernize. They'll do things like, Mary has a little lamb and thinks that it perhaps will end its days like beef and ham compressed into a capsule.
Oh, I do think that's good. Yes. Yeah, well, anyway, I think that's about what Mr. Livingston would enjoy for his breakfast. Poor old boy. He certainly looked tired when he arrived here last night. Like a little baby deprived of its sleep.
Oh, that's an unkind comparison. A baby is notoriously the most greedy, egocentric, and grasping of organisms. Even while it is being tenderly talcumed, it is plotting how it can snatch your eyeglasses, eat the nearest safety pin, and scream with rage when unable to bite off its own toe. I love them. I find them irresistible.
Yeah, I suppose nature made them so cuddly to compensate for taking advantage of us. Yeah, by the way, do we have Mr. Livingston all day, or does Mr. Wellman help to unroll the red carpet?
Oh, I'm afraid Mr. Wellman is too busy playing host to a small virus which has taken up a homestead in his left bronchial tube.
Oh. It seems almost unfair to use penicillin on a little virus brave enough to attack our Clarence.
Mr. Wellman appears to be convinced that it was through some witchcraft that he was victimized.
Oh.
I think he believes the virus was an intimate friend of mine. He sent on a mission of personal vengeance. Well, I tried to explain that I was... I'll get it, Vicky.
Hello, Bill. How are you this fine Founders Day? And where is your lovely, your beautiful, your magnificent wife? I saw the sunrise this morning, and I want to tell her how unfavorably it compared with her.
Shh. Hello, Charles. I'm fine in the living room.
You're fine in the living room? That's great. But how are you in the kitchen? Hello, Mrs. Hall.
Hello, Mr. Merriweather. How are you?
Never better. Although I'd like to know just why I'm whispering like this.
No. It was just in the hall. Mr. Livingston is still asleep in the guest room.
And yeah, we don't want to wake him up.
Ah, well, bless his little old arteries. He gave me the excuse for coming over to see you so early in the day. Before Mr. Wellman took to his little trundle bed yesterday with what passes in him for a fever, and with him 106 is normal, our board chairman appointed me his deputy for the Founders Day caper.
Why, that's splendid, Charles. And did Mr. Wellman impress upon you the necessity of dignity in honoring our venerable graduate of the class of 1880?
And did his voice thicken with emotion as he contemplated the years of Ivy history represented by Silas Livingston?
Yes, ma'am. With his head thick with emotion, or something, Keep reading. Said he, trembling with hope and avarice, Meriwether, he said, you'll answer for it if that refugee from a mausoleum gives this college less than $25,000.
Mr. Wellman is going to leave no living stone unturned, is he?
Well, in that calculating machine which serves Clarence for a heart, we must recognize a certain amount of sentiment, ma'am. And with him, 100 sentiments equals $1. Now, what's first on the entertainment schedule for our rollicking relic, Bill?
The Grand Tour. A ride around the campus in the president's car. You know, the state vehicle that doubles as a grocery wagon when Vicky goes shopping.
Yeah. Oh, Toddy, before we go, remind me to take the laundry out of the car and also replace the back seat.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yes, Mr. Livingston wouldn't see much of the campus sprawled on the floor on the back of the car, would he?
Perhaps someday Ivy will have an official limousine for these occasions. Chauffeur-driven. With me sitting on a little platform with a megaphone. Dispensing historical data and campus gossip. There'll be a small placard which says, please do not tip the guide. Over which I will hang my overcoat.
Well, I'll have to go now, but I'll see you tonight. With Clarence being sick, I have to read his speech. And I hereby serve notice that I'm going to boff it up with a few yarks. At present, it sounds like a farewell address written by a manic depressive Aztec just before jumping into a flaming volcano.
Well, any humor you can inject into the proceedings will be welcome, Charles.
Yes, you go ahead and yock it up. I'll be in the audience leading the clack.
Thank you, ma'am. It's only my lumbago which keeps me from kissing the hem of your garment. Just remember to save a few dances for me at the student ball tonight.
Well, of course I will.
I'll see you later.
Yes, goodbye, Charles. You know, I'm sure he came over here to let us know that he has no intention of playing panhandler for Clarence Wellman, who is convinced that in my usual inept way, I will fail to extract some money from Mr. Livingston.
He doesn't seem to realize that with the mosquitoes out of season, one doesn't put the bite on a house guest.
Of course. We can't put a price tag on hospitality.
No.
Besides, it was not... Now, who can that be?
Well, I'll get it, Toddy. I just hope all this commotion doesn't disturb Mr. Livingston. Mr. Livingston!
Howdy, ma'am. I see you folks are up and about.
Well, Mr. Livingston, I don't recall having locked you out last night, so could it be that you...
It could be. I'm an old farmer, Dr. Hall. While there wasn't any rooster to wake me up this morning, there were some mighty pretty little hens walking around the campus. So I went out to check the chickens.
They tell me that every American boy, at one time or another, wears a little celluloid badge that says chicken inspector. You've just kept yours longer than most people.
Well, it's an American tradition to keep an appreciative eye on our poultry, Mr. Livingston. After all, this country was founded on a Plymouth Rock.
Yeah. Anyway, I tried to get out as quietly as I could. I didn't want to wake you. Young folks like you need your sleep.
Well, I was waiting to send up your breakfast.
Yeah, figured you were, girlie, figured you were. Soft eggs, soft cereal, soft words. Can't stand any of them. So I stopped at that stand down the road a piece and had a hamburger and onion as thick as a double eagle. And a cup of coffee strong as a good Jersey bull.
Well, as a matter of fact, Mr.
There's a lot of improvements around here, including co-education. That little co helps in education, I think. Yes, sir. Co is an abbreviation for company, and everybody needs it. Oh, excuse me for interrupting you, Dr. Hall. Rude habit of mine. When you're 91, you haven't got time to listen to other people talking. You never know when you'll be interrupted for the last time, so. Oh, see, Mrs. Hall. Well, you're a real cute girl. Last night you weren't standing in the light where I could see you.
Oh, Mr. Livingston, I'm beginning to think it's a good thing this college wasn't co-educational when you were here. It wasn't ready for you.
What's on the schedule today, Mr. President?
After a ride around the campus, which, as you've already noticed, has changed considerably since 1880, we shall visit the chapel, where the student body will assemble to meet you. Then we will proceed to... Excuse me, Mr. Livingston. Dr. Hall speaking. Oh, yes, Mr. Wellman, how are you? Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Ah, you've heard about it. Yes, it's true, but I didn't let him out, Mr. Wellman. He went out by himself. Yes, and he had a hamburger for breakfast. Just a moment. With piccalilli?
With piccalilli. And mustard and onion and ketchup.
With everything. Oh, yes, he's here. Why, certainly. One moment. Mr. Wellman would like to talk to you, Mr. Livingston.
This is Silas Livingston. Who are you? Oh, chairman of the board, eh? Mm-hmm. Yes. Now, wait a minute, young fella. You talk too much and too fast. There you are, lying sick abed, and you're trying to tell me how to take care of myself. That's enough now. You've got to learn how to relax, or you'll burn yourself out before you're 80. I say that's enough. Goodbye.
Mr. Livingston, if this keeps up, I hope you live to be 150.
Well, I intend to, girlie. I intend to. He wants something from me, that young fella, and I'll bet it's money.
Well, how can you tell on such a short acquaintance?
Oh, Victoria, Mr. Livingston is a farmer. He's been around domesticated animals long enough to know when they are looking for a little sugar.
Yes, sir, they sort of sashay up to you real winsome, like you were the best friend. And if you haven't got an apple in your hand, they give you a soft, reproachful look and try to kick your head off.
Well, in all fairness to Mr. Wellman, I must say that he has never realized the truth of the old adage that just because you raise a little cane doesn't mean you end up with a lot of sugar.
Yeah, maybe so. But I sure would like to see that boy's face when he finds out that the only green stuff I've got grows on my farm.
Well, he'll have to find it out for himself. We aren't going to tell him.
And now, if it pleases you, Squire Livingston, the gas-powered Surrey awaits without. My wife and I will be pleased to show you the garden in which we labor, for it can truly be said that a university must also be dedicated to growth and change, or it, too, can become a wasteland.
We admit to being a little sentimental about this college, Mr. Livingston. As the poet said, here the heart may give a useful lesson to the head, and learning wiser grow without his books.
What poet was that, Mrs. Hall?
William Cowper.
Cooper, darling.
Hmm?
It is spelled Cowper, but pronounced Cooper.
Charlie, only just the other day, I heard you call him Cowper.
Oh, I know, my dear. I sometimes do. Confusion dating back to my student days in your lovely country. There was an old Scots professor, Angus MacLaren. When he was challenged with his pronunciation of Cowper, he would say, "My lads, I come from Aberdeen. And until you learn to call a cow a coo in the Highlands, I prefer to call a coo a cow while I'm wasting my time south of the border with you young heathens."
Presentation of The Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
As we return to The Halls of Ivy, it's the evening of the same day. We find Dr. and Mrs. Hall and Mr. Merriweather on the sidelines of the Founders' Day student ball. They've just come from the alumni dinner, and as Mr. Merriweather observes...
Well, that certainly was the shortest dinner on record.
And the shortest faculty reception, and the shortest student chapel.
Now, don't tell me that Gaffer Livingston broke them up, too.
No, he most certainly did. He has a dislike for pompous occasions, which amounts to a phobia. The psychologists, I suppose, would call him a ceremoniophobiac. The psychologists, as opposed to those lovers of ritual who might be called fanfarophiles. I myself am an in-betweener. I am a sort of take-it-or-leave-itologist.
Yeah, well, put me up for membership in that. I've been an MC on several occasions, but I found that the best way to master a ceremony is to stay away from it. What did our guest do at the chapel?
Well, he acknowledged William's introduction with great charm, and then said, if my memory serves me right, and it serves me good and right, you would all rather be outside than in here, so consider yourselves dismissed.
but they reconvened outside the door, where he stayed for 2 hours and captured their hearts completely.
Yeah, well, where's the little leprechaun now? You know, he moves faster at 91 than I did at 20. And I was known as Where'd He Go Merriweather.
When I last saw him, he was engaged in light banter with a junior Phi Beta Kappa and the Ivy homecoming queen. And he had both of them in a delighted trance.
If I were only his age. It's terrible to be as young as I am. A callow 60.
Well, age is a matter of outlook, not years, Mr. Merriweather. And as long as you can still get out and look, you're young. Uh-oh, here comes the oldest living alumnus.
Hey, what are you folks standing around here for? Like last summer's constable. Why don't you dance with the president's wife, son?
Mr. Livingston, for somebody to call me son is so refreshing, I'd burst into a Charleston if the floor wasn't so crowded. Praise be.
Well, just because you're on the Board of Governors, boy, don't mean you can't relax. I got a theory that sitting around a boardroom table does something to the character.
Well, I've heard it said that the difference between a chairman and the rest of the board is that the motion goes through the membership and the chairman just goes through the motions.
Oh. Anyway, Mr. Livingston, Mr. Merriweather did ask me to dance and I told him I was saving this one for you.
Oh, no, no. Thanks anyway, girlie. Can't dance this kind of dancing. Just isn't sociable. Well, dancing isn't dancing unless everybody joins in. These kids don't know what real fun square dancing is.
Oh, but they do, Mr. Livingston. We have weekly square dancing sessions at the social hall. Every student has blue jeans or a calico dress and can do-si-do with the best of them.
Is that right?
Oh, yes.
Oh, well, sir, you're looking right at the finest fiddler this side of the Ozarks. Known at home as the Heifetz of the Hayloft.
How wonderful. Oh, dear, what should we do for a caller? Mr. Merriweather, do you think you...
Oh, no, not me, ma'am, no. Maybe one of the students. Wait a minute. I know the best caller east of the Great Divide, if I may use the term so soon after March 15th.
Now, what's he up to now?
Oh, something outrageous, I'm sure.
Ladies and gentlemen, scholars, members of the Student Council, and gatecrashers. Our distinguished guest, Mr. Silas Livingston, is, by his own admission, a gifted square dance fiddler who has put more turkeys in the straw than Kane's warehouse, which is a theatrical joke for Mrs. Hall and myself only. So line up your sets and bow to your lady. We're going to square dance.
I wonder who's going to call.
And for a caller, friends, as the cream rises to the top, we skim this one right off the lip of the separator. For our caller, I call upon Dr. William Todhunter, Tex Hall.
No, really, I couldn't. Good heavens, I don't.
Come on, Charlie. Come on, it's a splendid idea.
Not me, please.
Yes.
Vicky has finished.
Come on, Bill, come on. You've been elected unanimously.
No, I'm sorry, Charles. It's a little out of my... No. After all, I...
Bashful, are you, son?
No, it isn't that. It's just that I don't... for small faculty parties, perhaps, but...
All right, Bill. I'll see who else I can find.
Oh, well, Charles, if you insist, of course. string your fiddle, Mr. Livingstone.
Yippee!
Ready, Mr. Fiddler?
Yeah, ready as you'll ever be. Let her rip.
Now, honor your partner, lady on your left. All join hands and circle left. Four rows back, about a mile, lady in the gentleman wire. First couple of waves to the right, four hands round with all your might. Circle four around the town, birdie in the gate, and three hands round. Ha ha. Now, the birdie flies out, and the crow hops in. Three hands up, and you're gone again. Crow hops out with the right hand cross, back to the left and don't get lost. Break to your corner, how are you? Partner left and a howdy do. Chicken in the bread pan, picking up gravel. One more change and on you travel. Now on to the next and circle four. That was good, Vicky, my darling. I can understand now the full meaning of giving a condemned man a hearty breakfast. It prepares one for any eventuality.
Who's condemning you and for what?
Well, I'm afraid, my dear, that some of our more straight-laced board members might take exception to my public exhibition last night. I wonder if I did the right thing.
Well, of course you did. You were perfectly splendid.
Oh, I don't think I... After all, I had never... I... Was I really?
Well, you most certainly were. Everybody thought you were the greatest thing since Paul Bunyan. And if Bunyan isn't the... Bunyan isn't the patron saint of the square dance, he should be.
Well, square dancing is a social release. It gives otherwise shy and retiring people an opportunity to kick up their heels, bow from the waist, curtsy and sashay. In mock seriousness, they are acting as pioneers. And at last, for a brief time, they regain the mutual shoulder-to-shoulder, hand-in-hand group spirit of their frontier forebears. It is this group spirit which... Do you think if I write this out in pamphlet form that Arthur Murray would buy it?
Let's sell it to the Board of Governors first, shall we?
Good point, yes. But as an American institution, I don't see how Ivy's governors could frown upon a square dance on Founders Day.
Oh, what's a frown? Just a couple of eyebrows getting together for a little gossip.
After all, our country was born to the ribald tune of Yankee Doodle. John Henry laid steel rails with a 30-pound hammer in his hand, singing she'll be coming round the mountain when she comes.
Woo-hoo!
Blow the man down, they shouted, going around the horn. And drill, ye terriers, drill, as they cut through mountains. And when they spread out in the lonesome wilderness, they sang, Yippee-i-o-ki-yay! Well, can you tell me why our Yippee-i-o-ki-yay isn't just as pretty as your Hey Nonny Nonny?
Offhand, I don't really know.
Yes? Oh, yes, Mr. Wellman, this is Dr. Hall, also known as Tex Hall. I most certainly did, and I do not consider it undignified. No, Mr. Wellman, I did not ask Mr. Livingston for any money. He has sufficiently enriched the college by his visit. He is leaving this morning with the official thanks of Ivy College. I'm sure that you will wish to join in such an expression to our oldest alumnus. Yes, Mr. Wellman. Goodbye.
Good for you. I was standing up for your grand right and left.
I hope I didn't stand up for them so loudly as to waken Mr. Livingston.
Oh, it'd take more than a phone call for that, I'm afraid. He was so tired last night he couldn't lift his chin off his fiddle. Wasn't he wonderful, though, Tom?
Yes, in many ways he was a tonic for all of us.
That's a nice thing to hear so bright and early in the morning.
Ah, good morning, good morning.
I hope we didn't wake you up, Mr. Livingston.
Oh, I've been awake and about for some time. Had to get my packing done.
Have some coffee?
Oh, thank you, Miss Hall. Thank you. Yes, sir, I've been up there listening to everything you said. It's the privilege of an old man to snoop now and then. Sometimes the only way to hear good things. this has been the nicest 2 days of my life, Dr. Hall. And I'm grateful to Ivy. I want to do something in return.
Oh, Mr. Livingston...
No, just a minute. The one thing I missed at Ivy when I was here was a proper agricultural course. Now, Ivy's got one, but it's not complete. Dr. Hall, here's the deed to my modern, completely equipped 500-acre farm with all its pedigreed livestock to be used as an experimental farm for the ag school.
How absolutely wonderful!
Mr. Livingston...
I made it out to Ivy before I came here, just in case. But after last night, and after your little speech this morning, I'm sure it's just what I want to do.
The Livingston Experimental Farm. On behalf of the students of Ivy who will benefit, our most heartfelt thanks, Mr. Livingston.
Well, now I better be getting home. I'm going to stay with my son, a young whippersnapper of 70 who's badly in need of a guiding hand. There's the Twiggers bench, you know. Well, excuse me. I'll go get my valise.
Well, there goes a good kid.
Yes, a grand old young man. As Cicero said, for as I like a young man in whom there is something of the old, so I like an old man in whom there is something of the young. And he who follows this maxim... in body will possibly be an old man, but he will never be an old man in mind.
And she murmured. Ladies and gentlemen, the secret word tonight is tree. T-R-E-E.
Really?
You bet your life! The more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers of America present Groucho Marx in You'll Bet Your Life, the comedy quiz series produced and transcribed from Hollywood. And here he is, the one, the only...
That's me, Groucho Marx. Well, here I am again with $1,000 for one of our couples tonight. Fenneman, who's first to try for it?
Well, just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected a couple about to be married, Groucho. Mm-hmm. And here they come now. I'd like you to meet Beverly Eccles and Robert Reynaud. The fiancé is a police officer, and this is Beverly Eccles. Beverly, right here.
Welcome, youngsters, for the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers. And if you say the secret word, you'll win $100. It's a common word, something you see every day. Beverly Eccles, is that
That's right.
You're a remarkably beautiful girl, Beverly. Huh?
Thank you.
You're not surprised at that compliment, are you?
Not exactly. Isn't that what they pay you for?
Huh? I beg your pardon?
I'm sorry. I just said, isn't that what they pay you for?
Hey. They pay me for you to be beautiful? That I don't follow at all, huh? It's a good thing your old man is a cop, huh? Robert Reynaud, what do you do on the police force, Bob?
I work PIC.
And what does that mean?
Pedestrian and intersection control, like traffic downtown.
I see. You're a police officer. Well, I'm pleased to meet you. You could put me in jail for that, you know. You know, pleased to meet you. What kind of work do you do, Beverly?
I'm a textbook clerk at Virgil Junior High School.
A textbook clerk?
That's right.
What does that consist of?
Well, I issue textbooks to the students.
And he issues summonses, huh? Do you have any little issues? No. So you two are going to be married, is that right, Bob?
That's right.
I don't know what fruit stand you swiped her from, but you certainly got a peach. How old are you, Bob?
23.
And you?
I'll be 19 next week.
You're getting mixed up with the law at a pretty early age, aren't you? Now, let's talk about your marriage. For example, Bob, how many children are you going to have?
Oh, I think 4 would be about right.
You want to walk the beat all day and all night, too, huh? How do you feel about 4 children, Beverly?
Oh, 2 would suit me fine.
Well, we'll try to get 2 to suit you and 4 to suit him. Now, Beverly, after you're married, suppose after you're married you're alone in the house at 3 o'clock in the morning and you hear somebody at the front door. Now, what would you do? Would you shoot him with Bob's revolver?
Oh, I'd look and see if it was Bob first.
And if it was Bob coming home at 3 in the morning, then you'd shoot him? Bob, what should Beverly do if she hears a noise in the middle of the night?
I'll call the police.
And what are you doing, hiding under the bed? Fine policeman, huh? Suppose she called the cops and they caught me. What would happen? Would I get the rubber hose?
No, we don't use those old-fashioned third-degree methods anymore. We use a little psychology.
Oh, you use psychology on me? Let's hear you try. Now, what would you do?
Well, sir, with a few simple questions, we can iron this out without any trouble. Mm-hmm.
Such as what?
Well, I would like to know what you were doing in the vicinity of my home at 3 a.m. in the morning.
Why don't you go back to the chief's office and play canasta? If I tell you what I was doing in your place at 3 o'clock in the morning, you'll shoot me. Well, you make a very nice couple, and I'm sure a policeman's lot will be a very happy one for both of you, Beverly. Now, you're going to play You Bet Your Life for a chance at $1,000. But before we start, I want you to listen to Fenneman. He has something particularly interesting to say.
Friends, your DeSoto Plymouth dealer knows that the best way to keep you as his customer is to treat you fairly and squarely every time. And as car owners from coast to coast know, your DeSoto Plymouth dealer also handles 2 really great cars. The brilliant DeSoto and the beautiful Plymouth. The new DeSoto is a smooth riding beauty and so economical to operate. it steers with a touch as light as a feather. DeSoto is a safe car to operate, too. No car in America has bigger brakes. And, of course, DeSoto is the car that lets you drive without shifting. So, for comfort and reliability, for economy and safety, you can't beat the performance of the magnificent DeSoto. Be sure to drive a DeSoto before you decide on any car. And remember, all dealers who sell DeSoto also sell Plymouth. Look for those two great names linked together. DeSoto, Plymouth.
Now, let's see if you two will get a chance at the $1,000. Phantom, and explain the rules.
Each of our three couples has $20. They bet as much of that 20 as they want on each of four questions. The couple that earns the most money gets a chance at the $1,000 DeSoto Plymouth question at the end of the show. Our other two couples are in a waiting room offstage, so they don't know what's happening out here.
That clear? Okay. Here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected comic strip artists. Now, here's your first question. How much of the 20 will you try?
10.
10? What comic strip about an Irish couple does George McManus draw?
Jigs.
Maggie and Jigs is right.
And you're on your way. You have $30.
All right, remember, you're going for $1,000 tonight. Now, you've got $30. How much of the 30 will you try?
20.
20. What comic strip about a young family does Chick Young draw?
Dagwood.
Blondie.
That's right. Blondie.
They're climbing now. They have $50.
I always thought Dagwood was a sandwich. Now you got $50. Here's your third question. How much of the 50?
40.
40. All right. What cartoon does Ham Fisher draw?
Grumps. Gumps?
No, no. Decide on an answer between them.
Ham Fisher.
Ham the couple.
Fisher. Huh? Oh, I'm sorry. It's Joe Palooka. You should have known that. It's been on for a long time.
And they've dropped to $10.
Well, you're down to $10. Now, here's your last chance to beat the other couples. How much of the 10 will you try?
10.
I'll try it.
Shoot it all? Okay. What strip about a detective does Chester Gould draw?
Dick Tracy.
Dick Tracy, Dick Tracy is right.
And the $20.
Thanks and good luck from the DeSoto Plymouth dealers.
Now, don't go too far away, you two, because you still may get a chance at the big question. Thanks again.
Yeah.
Thanks for showing up. The others may win nothing.
Groucho, our next couple has been off stage, so they don't know the secret word is tree. Okay, fellas, you can bring them in now, please. Just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected a furniture salesman and a housewife. And here they come now. The housewife is Marie Adams. The furniture salesman, Mr. S.W. Lachaz. Folks, come on over here and meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome to You Bet Your Life, and if you say the secret word... If you say the secret word, you'll split $100 between you. It's a common word, something you see every day. Marie Adams, is that right?
Yes.
That's a very historical name. Are you related to John Adams? Or
no,
Quincy
I wish
Adams,
I sure wish
Adams
I were.
Adams Express Company or Frank Adams or anybody named Adams?
No.
Must be related to somebody. Mrs. Adams, you're the furniture salesman?
No, I'm the housewife. Just the housewife.
And Mr. LaChasse is the furniture salesman, is that right? You can understand my mistake. You're the one that looks upholstered, and I didn't make it. Where are you from, Marie?
Well, I'm from Minneapolis, Minnesota.
You're a svenska?
I'm Norwegian, Ikasnakanorsk.
Well, you can, as far as I'm concerned. Well, where are you from, Mr. LaChasse?
Oh, I'm from Sloan's.
Sloan's? Is that in California?
Well, that's in Beverly Hills.
Oh, then you're really from Beverly Hills, is that right?
Well, no, I'm from St. Louis, but I work in Beverly Hills.
Oh, that's a long way to drive to work in the morning. Well, I suppose you know best. Now, I'm not going to stand here and argue with a furniture salesman. Huh? He's liable to slap me with his Chippendale, huh? Now, as a furniture salesman, what do you do exactly?
Exactly?
Yeah, well, precisely.
Well,
this fellow's a stickler.
I sell furniture.
Now, suppose I stroll innocently into your furniture store. What are you going to sell me?
Well, what do you got in your mind?
It wouldn't interest you. You're a furniture salesman. Let's say I'm interested in furnishing my home. Now, what are you going to sell me?
Well, dark wood or blonde?
You're kidding, aren't you? What have you got in the way of a blonde? And don't tell me the floor walker.
Well, a French provincial is blonde.
Okay, tell me some more about this French blonde. What does she look like?
Well, a light blonde, thin legs, and...
Well, okay, send her over, but you'll have to fatten up those legs, huh? What sort of work does your husband do, Marie?
Well, he's a cabinet maker.
A cabinet maker? Well, so is Truman, but what does he do? How did you meet your husband? Did he nail you to the wall or something?
No, I met him over in Honolulu.
You met him in Honolulu?
Yes, sir.
What was he doing over there?
Well, I had an opportunity to go over there in the year 1924. So they had an ad in the paper, an inexperienced girl to work in a Chinese laundry.
Well, how does the Chinese laundry differ from any other kind? I mean, you just take out chop suey stains?
No. So I went over there and they hired me. And so they put me on the switchboard. And then beside me is about...
You stay there all night, huh?
I stayed there for 2 months.
On the switchboard?
Yes, sir, for 2 months. Stayed on the switchboard.
Well, you were just plugging along there, huh? And what happened, huh?
Well, then a fellow phoned in about his laundry, you know, and the steamship just landed. The steamship Licky Licky. So he asked me if his laundry was ready, and I asked his name, and I said, yes, your laundry is ready. Just...
Where did you do this laundry? On top of the switchboard?
On top of the switchboard. So he came in and got his laundry, and I waited on him, and he says, you look like a new girl here. I says, yes, I just came today. Well, he said, how'd you like to see the sights of Honolulu? They pronounce it Honolulu over there when I was there.
Well, it's like Licky Licky, huh?
Licky Licky. So I said, I'd love to see the sights. So he took me out that evening, and that almost finished it.
I don't understand. Why, it almost finished what? I don't understand. What was going on that was about to be finished there?
Well, he took me out to Chinese dinner, too, you know, and he finally took me down the submarine. And so he wouldn't let me up.
You led a very fairly active life over there.
Well, he wouldn't let me so he finally proposed to me, and he wouldn't let me up out of the submarine unless I promised him I'd marry him. I had to say yes.
Did he sing How Deep Is the Ocean or anything?
Well, I wish he had. If I'd have known it, I wouldn't have gone down in the submarine.
And then what happened? He proposed to you and then you got married?
Well, I had to come back here to Los Angeles because I was working for the Suntan Leather Company. And they were waiting for me. They didn't know what happened to me over there.
I can well understand that. I don't know what happened to you right here. Well, it's a very interesting story, Marie, and I'm crazy about every word of it, huh? Now, let's see how well you two make out in the race with $1,000. You've got to work together as a team and run your $20 into more than our other couple. I can't tell you how much our first couple won, but Fenneman's going to remind our listeners.
The engaged couple won $20.
Here we go. Now, let's see how high I can build you $20. Now, talk loud right into the microphone. You select the tools of the trade as your category. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. Now, here's your first question. How much of the 20 will you risk?
$10.
$10?
Shout it right out, Marie. Huh?
$10!
You have a Stentor. That's 20 already. Just keep it 10, huh? Now, who uses a stethoscope?
Well, that would be a doctor.
A doctor is right. And on the way, they have $30. You've got $30. Remember, you're going for $1,000 tonight. Now, how much of the 30 will you try?
Well, 25.
He said 25.
Who are you talking to over there? I thought there was somebody in there from the Mars. Some little gnome over there. All right, here we go. Who uses litmus paper and a beaker?
Well, that would be a chemist.
A chemist is right.
Really on my way now. They have $55.
You have $55, and here's your third question. And how much of the 55 will you try?
50.
50?
50! Did you say 15?
50.
Oh, 50. She knows somebody in there. You can't try. Now, who uses a composing stick and a slug casting machine?
Well, that would be a lithographer or a printer.
A printer is right, huh?
$105.
These are very difficult questions. I don't know any of these answers. And I'm certainly as dumb as the average man, huh? All right, here's your last chance. They got $105. Here's 105. Your last chance to beat the other couple. Now, how much are you going to try?
$100.
$100.
She's cute, isn't she? Marie, if I was 5 years younger, I'd marry you. I don't know whether you'd accept me. Huh?
I'm old enough to be your mother already.
That has never stopped me, Marie. Okay, here we go for the coup de grace now. Who uses a hod and a trowel?
Well, that would be a bricklayer.
A bricklayer is that?
And they wind up with a grand total of $205.
Well, there, kid. You're wonderful, both of you, huh? Thanks and good luck from the DeSoto Plymouth dealers.
Now we'll soon know who's going to get the chance at the $1,000 question, because at this point, the furniture salesman and the housewife who were just here are leading with $205. And, of course, the secret word is still tree. Okay, fellas, bring in the next contestants, please. We invited tonight some Boy Scouts and some doctors. And just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected Richard Van Winkle, the Boy Scout, and the doctor, Morgan Lindbergh. And here they come now. Folks, meet Groucho Marx.
We shake hands with the Lindbergh. Now, Richard Van Winkle, you've been asleep for 20 years, haven't you? Huh?
Not quite.
Oh. Well, hello, boys, and welcome to the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers. How do you like that for a brilliant piece of persiflage, huh? Now, if you say the secret word, you'll divide $100 in cash. It's a common word, something you see every day. Richard, you're a boy scout. No, a boy scout, is it? I don't read very well, huh? You're a boy scout, huh? Glad to see you. It's always nice to have a man in uniform on the show. And, doctor, you're a doctor, huh? Well, a little more respect. It's nice to have you here, too. How old are you, Richard?
17.
17, huh? Isn't that a little old for scouting?
You're never too old for scouting.
I think I see what you mean. Now, are you married, Doc?
No.
Don't be so defiant, huh? Haven't done much operating yet, eh?
Well, no.
Why aren't you married, Doc? Doc and Dick we got in.
I'm waiting until I can afford them.
You mean you're going to stay single all your life?
I haven't looked at it that way.
How about you, Dickie? Are you married?
No, sir.
Can't you afford it either?
No, sir.
Why don't you just marry some rich girl who has an allowance of, say, $7 a week or so? What is your ambition after you graduate from school, if you ever do?
I'd like to go into professional scouting.
Professional scouting? No fool he, huh? Now, as a Boy Scout, has anything unusual ever happened to you, Richard?
Yes, I was giving a demonstration on safety with tin cans and how to cut them and make stoves safely. And I proceeded to cut my hand in three places in front of everybody.
So what happened?
So I taped them up and finished.
Finished what?
The demonstration.
These people must have been impressed to watch you. You stand there bleeding like a stuck pig. And what is a stuck pig, by the way? I never did understand. Do you know what a stuck pig is?
I don't know.
The origin, Doc, what about you?
No.
It's going to make a great doctor, this fella. Doc, where is your office? You have an office, I presume.
No, I haven't got an office. I'm,
You work in the streets? Just no. Pick up odd jobs as you walk along?
No, I'm in the county hospital.
Oh, well, that's too bad. What seems to be the trouble?
Oh, I have an internship there.
You have a what?
An internship.
Where are you going, to Europe? What's an internship? Is that anything like an outgoing ship?
Internship is a year that every doctor has to spend after he gets out of school, where he practices on patients in hospitals.
Well, if you're going to practice on the people, I suppose a hospital is the best place. Huh? At least they don't have to so far to go in case something happens to them. Now, that's a pretty snappy outfit you've got on there, Dickie boy. What kind of a scout are you? Are you a general?
No, I'm an eagle.
An eagle? Well, let's see you fly around the room. Would you mind shaking hands with a pigeon? I used to be an eagle, but my wings got clipped by a French blonde. With skinny legs. Now, what is an eagle? What is an eagle?
That's the highest rank in scouting that you can receive after you've accomplished certain merits of citizenship and got 21 merit badges.
Dickie, that sounds like quite an honor. Congratulations, eh? What are some of your, do you do first aid, too? Is that one of your accomplishments? Wake up, Doc. He's dreaming of that stuck pig, I think. Have you got a merit badge for first aid?
No,
I... You haven't, huh? No. The doc is pretty cute at that, isn't he? Everybody's cute up here but me. You haven't got a merit badge? A big boy like you with a crew haircut? You ought to be ashamed of yourself.
Sorry.
Well, keep trying. There's no age limit to scouting, you know. Now, as an intern, precisely what do you do?
Well, we work up the patient.
You mean you wake up the patient, don't you? Huh? Imagine he'd be all waked up as soon as he learned an intern was working on him. Doc, now pretend you found me cold on the sidewalk, and I'm your patient. Now, you proceed. You wake me up.
What's wrong with you?
Sounds like an old... Some doctor, that's your job. You find out what's wrong with me. Go ahead.
Then,
a wise guy.
Then, I'll have to give you an examination.
Well, I'd like a couple hours to bone up first, huh? What happens after the examination?
Well, they'll give you some lab tests. Red count, white count, differential.
Gloria Swanson used to go with a white count. Many years ago. You say, what was the last one you did?
Differential.
Well, there's nothing wrong with my differential. And if there was, I'd have my DeSoto Plymouth dealer fix it. However, there's been some talk that my clutch has been slipping. Doc, suppose you found me collapsed on the sidewalk. What would you do? What would you do if you found me?
I'd call a doctor.
You'd call a doctor, huh? Well, if you do, don't call Lindbergh, will you? Get me a stuck pig or a licky licky. Doc, I've been pretty hard on you, but if you had me on your operating table, you'd fix me up. Now, what would you do to me if I was your patient?
Well, the first thing I'd do is sterilize that mustache.
Yeah, you touch one hair of my mustache and I'll pour glue in your stethoscope. Well, you're both good scouts, and so I now pronounce you man and boy. Now, you're going to play your bet your life. You beat our other two couples, and you'll get a chance at the $1,000 DeSoto Plymouth question. I can't tell you how much our other couples won, but Fenneman's offstage to remind our listeners.
The furniture salesman and the housewife are leading with $205.
All right, here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected names of college teams. Here's your first question. How much will you bet?
$10.
What is the name of the team from Stanford?
Indians.
Indians is right. And on the way, we have $30. Remember, you're going for $1,000. Now, how much of the $30 will you risk on your second
one?
$20. What is the name of the team from UCLA?
Bruins.
Bruins is correct.
They're climbing back home. They now have $50.
All right, you got $50. Here's your third question. How much will you bet?
$40.
What is the name of the team from Princeton?
Tigers.
Tigers is right.
They're really on their way now. They have $90.
Okay, now here we go. Here's your last chance to beat the other couples. Now, how much will you bet?
$30.
How much?
$30.
Have you conclusively decided on that? All right, here we go. What is the team from Michigan called?
The Wolverines.
Wolverines is correct.
And they wind up with a grand total of $120, and that means the furniture salesman and the housewife with $205 get the chance at the DeSoto Plymouth $1,000 question.
How's the weather around your neck of the woods? Well, if you haven't had that car of yours made ready for the weather that's ahead, better not wait any longer. Drive in tomorrow wherever you see the sign of a DeSoto Plymouth dealer. There you'll find the mechanics who know what to do and how to do it. They can save you the worry and bother when colder weather comes. They're factory trained in the latest servicing methods. They've the best tools and equipment to work with. And they'll do their jobs as promptly and efficiently as is humanly possible. Isn't this the kind of attention you want for your car? Well, it's no farther from you than the nearest DeSoto Plymouth dealer. The furniture salesman and the housewife all set for the big $1,000 DeSoto Plymouth question.
Okay, now if you win this swag, you know, you can make another trip to Honolulu and get a brand new husband, huh? Or you can go back and sit on that telephone switchboard, huh? Here we go now. Here we go for $1,000. I'll give you 15 seconds to decide on a single answer between you, so think carefully and no help from the audience. Here it is. Who is the only president ever to be buried in the city of Washington? I'm sorry, it's Woodrow Wilson, who was buried in the National Cathedral. I'm sorry, that's the correct answer. So that means the big question next week will be worth $1,500. Well, you lost the big money, but you won how much?
$205 in the quiz, Groucho.
Congratulations, and thanks to both of you.
Be sure to tune in again next Wednesday night at this time for the Groucho Marx Show, when the big question will be worth $1,500. And don't miss Groucho's television show, also presented by the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America. And remember, all dealers who sell DeSoto also sell Plymouth. Two great cars, both products of the Chrysler Corporation.
And when you drive in, tell them Groucho sent you. Good night, folks, and remember, just be sure to see your DeSoto Plymouth dealer.
Folks, here's a tip from the National Safety Council. Look out for the driver who doesn't look out for you. You Bet Your Life is transcribed from Hollywood and is produced by John Goodell, directed by Robert Dwan and Bernie Smith, music by Jerry Fielding. This is George Fenneman, signing off for the more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers from coast to coast.
Hey everyone, thank you for tuning in, and I hope you'll come back next week. Please stay safe and do all the stuff that the CDC says for you to do, and so you will be back next week, because it means a lot to me. In fact, it means the world to me. Thank you.